leadership, you're really what makes us such a success in Uganda. So are there questions for Tui? Question online? Oh, sorry. Right. Any questions for Dr. Tush? Please, Peter. Mike's coming.
Hi, Peter Davies. Can you indicate the source of the genes for the resistance to fungi, bacteria, and nematodes? You mentioned one gene came from pepper. The other question then is, how was this gene identified in the pepper?
Yes, the gene from pepper was identified by a Chinese institution, the Taiwan. It's a Taiwanese institution, and it was accessed by IITA through AATF, who has arranged a license for us to use the gene. And we've accessed it, and we are applying it in bananas. We are not the ones who isolated it. It was isolated by the Taiwanese institution. And the other genes are also coming from different institutions. University of Leeds has given us some of their nematode genes. We have some genes being developed by Venganza. It's a private company here in the U.S. And so on.
Okay. My question really is, what organisms did these come from apart from the pepper gene? Where does the resistance to nematodes come from, and what is its molecular basis?
Can I ask Frank, is part of the team, to give a hand in explaining this?
The genes that we're using for the bacterial wilt resistance is two of them. They're both from peppers. One's called PFLP. It's a protein-like ferritin thing. What it does is prevents the bacterium from picking up iron, and they starve to death before they have a chance to infect. The other gene is called HRAP, and it's an effector. It's basically an R gene, both from pepper. They're remarkable. These plants are essentially immune. I mean, I've seen them. Larry's seen them. I've been following this project for a long time, and it's the project being done by a young woman named Alina Tripathi with IITA. The genes for nematode resistance we're using a mazistatin gene that's well known to control nematodes. Another gene is a antifidant gene, and what we're doing is we're stacking these. We're putting these together. And Venganza has an RNAi, interfering RNA technology. Those are the ones we're interested in. And we're also doing for fusarium resistance. All of it would be interfering RNAi's technologies. So those genes are synthetic. What we're doing is those are being made and targeted against pathogenic genes that we put in the plant that will prevent the pathogenicity of the pathogen once it's infecting into the plant. That's the methodology there. Does that help? And they're very specific to those pathogens, which is very critical, because we don't want to be, controlling, non-targets.
Other questions? Yes, please.
My name is Fan Lee from USDA. Aside from the biosafety aspect of the research and bringing the product to commercialization, who is doing the food safety aspect of it for food safety approvals in these countries? And that's one question. The other question is I know a lot of these products, and this is, I guess, not just Uganda banana, but across the board, are for domestic use only, but is there thought about applying for approval elsewhere aside from the domestic countries?
Again, I will give part of the answer, and Frank, you will supplement. But the food safety studies, we haven't started on them yet, but we, apart from selecting genes which have been screened and are known not to have problems. And your second part, that whether the food, the products we develop will be used in other countries, yes, like other countries in the region, like Rwanda, Burundi, DRC, who grow bananas, definitely our products will go to those countries. We expect them to flow to those countries. Our borders are porous. What is grown in Uganda will automatically be picked by farmers in the neighboring countries, even if those countries didn't want. What is released in Uganda will go to other countries. Frank?
Aspects. We really want to get down to the point where we pick our final events before we start spending a lot of money on that kind of thing. But what we've done is the proteins we're working with, we've run them through all the codex type things. We're looking for allergenicity and any other things. We've done simple tests to see just how quickly they digest away and assimilate gastric fluids. Those simple kind of things at this stage. And so far, we have no red flags or pink flags or anything on any of these proteins. They look pretty good. But we're not going to spend any money doing any regulatory work until we're down to the two or three final events in all of them. So the idea there is the core. We have a lot of projects going on in banana in Africa. It's not just the ABSB2. We have biofortification projects. We have other projects with fusarium. And the idea is to coordinate all of these projects once we have events, so that we do this kind of in a coordinated manner to minimize the expense. This is going to be expensive. It's just life. Just that we have a very burdensome regulatory system, and we have to do it to make people satisfied.
I might add, mentioned the going to other countries, and clearly there's regulatory issues with respect to that. And one of the things that USAID is funding is to help with regional coordination in terms of regulatory, which we see happening and starting to move along. So I think as something like this could get released, there will be regulatory systems in place that can make it so that each country where it goes to will have systems in place to properly regulate them.
Any other questions, either from the audience here or online? Nothing online. Please send your questions if you have a chance. Larry Beach wants to make a comment.
This is Larry Beach again. Tish is always not usually touting his own horn here, and I would like to. I would like to make a point of. It was said in several ways, but the reality is what has happened in Uganda is this group has led for the rest of Uganda in other crops, and he mentioned that the people in cassava and cotton other crops have followed their lead and have had some help. This comes down to the point of when they have to start trying to apply for approval for confined field trial, the scientists from Kiwanda have sat down with the scientists from Namalongi working on cassava and sorted out how to do that. And now the scientists in Namalongi that are working on cassava are completely capable in doing confined field trials. They're on their third or fourth generation of confined field trials. And it's building. There are people, scientists there that are now about ready to plant nitrogen use efficient rice, the Noriko rice, that is part of a project with AATF that we're also helping to fund. There's scientists in collaboration with SIP that are ready to do a confined field trial in sweet potato. And there have been scientists working on water-efficient maize for Africa, all being able to do field trials in Uganda because of the leadership that occurred in Kiwanda. Fish mentioned the other funding from other agencies, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Gatsby Foundation. This is really significant. What has happened now is they are working on other projects that are also making very good success that have built on all of what they've done on this project. And they're getting a lot of money to be able to do that. So now we have a problem. We have a possibility of having a high provitamin A banana being produced because of that work, and maybe increased iron and zinc. I'm not sure where that's going to, when that's going to be available. But I've seen some really colorful bananas being produced by this group. And how many different products should be coming out? I think one of the issues that we have that is a good issue is maybe we need to combine these traits and have them all together. Those kind of discussions are ongoing, and what makes sense going to be what is it that makes sense in terms of the Uganda farmer. So there's a lot of progress here.
Marcella Schmansky from the State Department. So what is the government thinking, the regulatory people, are they thinking about stacked traits already?
I think this issue has not been discussed, but usually what we would do is to find out, we follow those who are ahead of us, particularly in advanced countries like USA, if they've stacked and the technology is working and is acceptable, then we'll be allowed to do it. As long as it has been done somewhere else, we'll be allowed to do it too. I don't know whether that answers your question. Frank, you can supplement.
Yeah, I mean, Larry just mentioned that there's a lot of different technologies going on. We have, for example, it's weevil. So there's a weevil resistance projects. There's a nematode resistance project. There's a Sigatoga, the fusarium, and the bacterial wilt, and possibly the biofortification project. The idea is to have one banana, or have many varieties of bananas that have all those traits. So the idea is to stack. Matter of fact, the RNAi stuff and the nematode stuff, the vectors we're building now already have all the genes in them. We're not building vectors that have individual genes.
So the government is thinking, or the regulatory system people are thinking, we're going to have to regulate stack traits. And we're getting ready for that.
Yes, they are. As a matter of fact, the transgenic cotton work, I didn't really want to get too much into it, is for Bolgard 2 and Roundup Ready Flex. And those are stacked. The idea going into Uganda with a single gene type of a transgenic probably isn't even being thought of right now.
And the nitrogen use efficient rice, and the Noriko rice has, in addition to nitrogen use efficiency, it has salt tolerance and drought tolerance. So there are stacks already that have been brought together in addition to the cotton to the regulators. They have looked at them. They've already approved the field trials. So they're starting to look at this. I think there's going to be situations where, because of the uniqueness of the crops and the constraints, that the regulators are not going to be able to look elsewhere to what has been done to find out what the best thing is to do. And part of the capacity building is also amongst the regulators, where they are learning what they need to deal with. But they are, and in fact the National Biosafety Committee is a very responsive committee that in most cases gets back pretty promptly about issues and asks good questions.
Yes.
Peter, please.
About 15 years ago, researchers at the Boyce Thompson Institute at Cornell put resistance to human hepatitis virus into bananas, and at that time touted it as a great advance in health care for Africa and similar countries. Did this go anywhere? Has there been any interest in putting vaccines into bananas in a practical way? Okay, if you can't answer it, it doesn't matter. Then it's hypothetical. Maybe somebody on the web can provide an answer.
But I've heard about that study, and I've also heard the challenge was if it continued, how would you control the dose that people would consume in these bananas, using a food as to administer a drug which requires a dose was challenging, and I think it was not going to go anywhere. And I think if that was introduced to Africa, it would be straight away rejected. I think what the technologies that are being introduced now, people quickly see the problem they are going to solve, and people are more positive about it. But we can hear others who have heard about this technology, what do they have to say?
Tush, I think that's the correct answer. It was discontinued, and I think all uses of food crops for carrying drugs is pretty much discontinued. Everybody realized that was a non-starter, but you may have comments.
Thank you. Demba from Senegal. My question is about the outreach and communication. Is there, beside your entity, any formal structure supposed to be doing the outreach to disseminate information over the outcome of your own research in helping other parts in Uganda, as you can see in the map, spotted areas down in the south area, that other people can, or groups can use those outcomes and just disseminate the work in other fields to increase the production of banana, for example. Thank you.
Yes, we... our department, the National Agricultural Research Organization, has a communications unit which links up with another communications unit in the Ministry of Agriculture, and at any one time they are studying the sorts of things we are doing both in research and other areas, and selecting what information is suitable to pass on to which group. Yes, we are linked to those communication groups, and everything possible is being done to make sure that the people who must know, and those who don't need to know at this time, they don't expose too much to them. It's the communicators who decide who they want to inform which audience is suitable for which information. Hey, I see you frowning, but maybe let me elaborate this.
Yeah, let me be clear. I'm asking the issue of information dissemination, because as you say, this is a very strategic information. At some point, I understand the sensitivity, but because it's meant to be furthering the development or the expansion, the production of banana, which is a as you described through the presentation, something that is used to really counter all those famine-related threats you might have, food security and stuff. I understand, but if definitely in the approach there is a sense of selective information dissemination, then may you be clear in identifying those hands onto which you wouldn't want the information just to be prevalent over. Who are those? Yeah.
Maybe probably I didn't present myself correctly. It's not selective dissemination. It's selective focus. If we don't focus on getting information to you, you might not get it. There are some groups, they've focused on people who must have the information, people who must know. Then there are some people, if they land on information well and good, but the focus is not on them yet. That's the categorization I'm talking about, how they've done it. For instance, like government officials who can stop the work from continuing, they must know what is happening. The groups of farmers who are waiting for a product and we don't have a product yet, we don't have to go to them to inform them that we are planning to develop a bacterial wilt-resistant banana and it will be transgenic when you don't even have you don't have a selected line yet. You don't need to bother the farmers to give them that excess information, but the planners, the government officials, they need to know what you are planning to do.
This is Larry Beach. Tushim, you might want to talk about how the regional, you know, scientific exchange helps that communication also. And you've had students, I believe, from other countries in your labs. How that might also help in terms of regional communication about the science.
Yes, indeed. In terms of region, at scientific level, we do a lot of interaction. We have some exchange students. Like right now, we have two from DRC who are working with DRC's Congo. Two students from Congo who are working with us on developing these transgenics, learning the science and what goes on, and when they go back, they can be our link people in extending that technology to them. But we've also held regional workshops and invited people, whoever is interested, to come, and he or she is taken around to see what is going on. Through those workshops, exchange programs, information is being disseminated to our neighbors.
Peter.
Seeing that Frank said that there's no way that these bananas are going to be released until they have stacked traits, what is your projected timeline for the release of these biotech bananas to the farmers, assuming that the trials, the field trials, are successful?
Our strategy is to finally have stacked traits, but simultaneously we are looking at the individual traits and where we get a good product to move forward with. Even before stacking, we will plan to release it. For instance, on one of our projects on biofortification, where we have the vitamin A banana, we've already decided. No, we have the target timing of 2019 to release it to farmers, and that the first line to be released will not be a stacked one. That will be a single line having only vitamin A, but behind will be developing others which will be having stacked genes, genes stacked to the important agronomic traits that farmers want. So it's a two-pronged strategy, stacking and singles being released at the earliest possible time.
Any other questions, either here or for from online? If not, going once, twice, we'll move on to the next presentation from Dr. Randy Altea. Thank you, Tush. Thanks very much.